And here we are back in the second segment here. Welcome, everybody. We're talking with John Rappaport about Snowden, surveillance, self-censorship, Common Core, and a whole lot more related to these kinds of topics. And of course, we've also discussed the Secret Space Program, the upcoming conference here, where I hope we will see all of you guys and gals out there. It's going to be a lot of fun, so do check out the website for that. But I wanted to carry on and continue to talk a little bit more about the bigger picture in terms of the surveillance state, John, and how this plays into self-censorship and specifically political correctness, because this is, of course, a really hot topic. It has been for quite a few years now, but I think that it still hasn't really sunk in with a lot of people of what actually is happening with our language, with our usage of terms, with our idea that there's a certain reflection in terms of how you are meant to self-censor yourself. I mean, I've been watching some of the entertainment out there in the last, 2 years or so, to actually done quite a bit of studies on it to see what actually is happening on this level. And it's just an extraordinary realization to see how they're pushing in the entertainment field, not only movies, but TV shows and these running series that are specifically coming out of Hollywood and the American, entertainment industry, as it were. But it's such a hot topic in the way that they've weaved this into this whole dialogue of what is going on now. How is your view in terms of what they're trying to achieve with self-censorship, how this ties in with political correctness, how they're trying to, stifle, creativity, how they're trying to stifle how people are thinking and everything else? I mean, I find it among one of the most important topics that there is, because I see how people act around these kinds of issues and the way, unfortunately, it makes people kind of shy away from it. What's your view on all of this, John?
Well, I think you're bringing up a central issue of our time, because we are seeing before our very eyes a shrinking of language. I've been aware of it for a very long time. A shrinking of people's ability to comprehend language that goes hand in hand with this. And part of this, of course, has to do with what is politically correct to say, what you must not say, the line that is drawn in the sand. And what does this do to people? Well, of course, they police themselves, which is the aim of the surveillance state. So all of a sudden, we see quite clearly that the surveillance state and political correctness are joined at the hip. They are basically one operation. They're not separate at all. They're involved in the same control, the same fascism, the same ability to be able to officially and unofficially, through peer pressure, through media exposure, destroy people who are held up as examples. And this is the underbelly of a number of these exposures and defamations and destructions to show people. Look what happened to Donald Sterling, the owner of the LA Clippers.
Yeah.
This could happen to you. The guy was having a private conversation with his mistress. Oh, by the way, the mainstream press has devoted really only, seconds to determine who actually did the recording.
I was amazed by that. It was like, wait a minute, this is a private, they never even clarified.
Yeah, right.
Did she record it? Who did this? It was a setup almost, in a way.
It becomes suddenly irrelevant. We don't care. Maybe God recorded it, because in his wisdom, he wants us to be more tolerant, less prejudiced or whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I'm looking at this as a reporter. Are you telling me that nobody's trying to find out here that has access to this woman, Stiviano, how this happened? At first, she denied that she recorded it. Wow. So in other words, let's see if we got this straight. You were sitting in a room with Donald Sterling, and he was telling you not to bring black people to the Clipper games. And it just so happened that simultaneously, somebody was recording, not you, but somebody else was recording that conversation, and not only recording it, but released it to this tabloid gossip program, TMZ. What are the odds? Wow. Incredible. You know, no, that's not part of the story. Nope. Not interested. Doesn't matter. Absolutely doesn't matter. Just like saying, you see, we don't care what Snowden's background is. It's the same thing. We don't care where he came from. We don't care if he's still working for the CIA. We don't care that he was a trained spy. And all spies are trained to lie above all else. They lie during breakfast, lunch, dinner. They wake up every morning and they look forward to lying. And if they can't lie all day long, they wash out. They're let go because that's the primary requirement of the spy. No, we don't care about any of that. It's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. Look at him. Look at his face. Look at his words. He's a hero. He's a patriot. We know that. You know, that kind of. So in the same way, no, we don't care who recorded this or what their motives were. Doesn't matter. The conversation with Sterling. It doesn't absolutely, that's, you know, beside the point. All that matters is what he said and what it means about him. And therefore, he has to go. Okay, so now he's gone. At a profit of about $1.5 billion, from what I can see, you know. So, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe Sterling recorded the conversation himself, right? Said, hey, I got a way to make $1.5 billion in about 2 weeks here.
Right.
And all I have to do is throw a few racial epithets around and make myself look like a horrendous guy. Fantastic. I think I'll go for it. Yeah. And they'll say that I'm crazy, and they'll say that I've got dementia. That's all good, cover story. And I walk away with $1.5 million, never have to worry about the Clippers again, buy my own island or whatever, you know. Don't have to see my wife anymore, whatever it is that he wants. But no, that's irrelevant, you see. When in fact, what's really happening in these cases is that the public is being conditioned to accept that any private conversation that anybody has about anything is grist for the mill. That's the psyop underlying all of this. That's what the surveillance state wants. So could you say that maybe the NSA did this or some spying agency? Sure you could. Absolutely. It benefits them to a tremendous degree because now people are saying and afraid not to say it. Private conversation, public conversation, doesn't matter. Does not matter one whit. If you're sitting on the toilet and your husband or wife walks in and you say blah, 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 and you've never said it before, and you'll never say it again. Doesn't matter. If it contains something that is considered to be politically correct, and it's recorded and exposed, your credibility, reputation, future, job, capacity to earn a living could go down the drain within minutes.
It'll destroy everything, as we've seen. It's just, it's unbelievable. I mean, I think that the psyop is as well that this is happening to the so-called, you know, rich and powerful, the celebrities. There's a number of these other cases. I don't want to take it away from Sterling here, so by all means continue that, but just to drop this in there as well, that we've seen even like, you know, Justin Bieber, whatever his name is, you know, same thing. He did some, you know, he said something inappropriate or whatnot, and then there's like an immediate, you know, judgment taking place in the entire world, basically, and a dismissal. He have to basically go down on his knees and apologies to this. I think it's a way to condition the people who are watching this, like, oh my God, look at that. They are powerful. They're in positions of being celebrities. People like them. But even that, even despite all that that they have behind them, they are being utterly destroyed for, you know, whatever inappropriate thought or word they happen to say, right? So it's a, as you say, it's definitely conditioning on a mass scale here.
You bet. Tremendous mass scale. And of course, in case people think that I'm just talking about racial or religious epithets, dismiss that from your mind. This operation, this covert op, is about any kind of language that could be deemed politically incorrect. And who knows up the road where that will go. For example, let's suppose a famous actor in a private conversation says something about the government. Something, you know, forceful, like, man, wouldn't it be fantastic if, you know, an earthquake took the whole of Washington, D.C. off the map tomorrow and it fell into the sea? Man, I'd get drunk and celebrate, you know, something like that. And he went on, you know, those sons of bitches in Washington and this and that and the other thing and whatever, you know. And he named a few names, senators, congressmen. I'd like to watch so-and-so drown under the waves, right? You know, and all of a sudden, as if everybody suddenly agrees to a new standard of what's correct and incorrect, this blows up into a gigantic story. Well, this is almost like what a terrorist would say. This is traitorous to the United States. This undermines public confidence. And coming from a celebrity who's a role model and this and our kids and what are they learning and blah, 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 beep, 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 you see. So now, at the very least, as you say, he has to get down on his knees and beg for forgiveness. And it'll be maybe 5 years before he gets another gig in Hollywood. And that's just the beginning, you see, of a new branch sprouting from the politically correct tree. Because it's not just one time, it's going to happen again.
Oh, yeah.
On the same subject, another celebrity says the same thing, but different words, you see. And now we got a new category. Got, you know, who is permitted among us to try to undermine public confidence in our government, because our government is basically there to help everybody, blah, 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 you see. This sort of collectivist idea of government, you know, paternalistic, whatever. And one after another of these subjects now becomes verboten. You can't talk about it. So 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years up the line, what do you think all this is going to look like? Now you've got, you know, a different vector on the surveillance state. It's the same thing. It's people policing themselves. And you don't need to bring them in front of a judge or a jury or send them to jail or any of that. All you need to do is to defame them in the press and force them into a position where they have to grovel. And maybe they'll be forgiven, maybe they won't be forgiven. That's what's going to happen. People are being taught as well that, trying to put this so it's going to be easily understood.
Right.
There's no difference, you see, between a casual remark and an essay that you might publish in the New York Times.
Right, exactly.
There's no difference between a joke and being serious. There are no levels of subtlety or nuance in between. There is no mind that can perceive any of these differences because so many people have been dumbed down. Therefore, these subtleties no longer exist. Therefore, there's a whole lot of language that is irrelevant now, you see. And this is what I mean when I say shrinking language. Because you can say things to people, I mean, I've had the experience, believe me, they just don't know what you're talking about anymore. They don't know.
Right.
Whether they react positively or negatively to what you say, it doesn't really matter. They just don't know what you're talking about because their command of the language has shrunk down to such a level, and we haven't seen anything yet, because with this whole business of political correctness, it keeps on going. And so if I were to stand up, you know, suppose I was nailed to the cross by one of these, I said, look, this is what I'm going to try to tell you here, right? I'm talking to this friend of mine over coffee, And so I said, blah, 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 blah. Now, when you listen to my tone and as we laugh about it, this is a kind of a humor that's existed for maybe, I don't know, 100,000 years, where people laugh at something, and this is what the laughter really means. And there's going to be a massive numbers of people saying, this guy's insane. He doesn't know what he's talking about. All we know is this is what he said. These are the literal expressions. It's all about the literal now. See, that's all there is, the literal. I have written articles that were clearly fiction. I mean, only an idiot would believe that they were fact. And I have gotten emails from people saying, I didn't see this written anywhere else. Are you sure this is true? I mean, you know, it was science fiction. And the names of the people were buffoonery. You know, it was satire, and there was no question about it.
Right, yeah.
And then I've also gotten emails from people who have said, well, I understand what you're saying, but you see, you should be careful because other people will take it as being fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, who appointed you the commissioner of public safety? You know, I mean, so I'm with you on this. This is a whole arena here. And so what we're seeing is the decimation of the language, the subtleties, the meanings of language, expression, emotion, shrinking it all down to the literal, and also the destruction of privacy. So there is no longer any distinction between what is public and what is private. It doesn't matter where you say it. It's all the same thing. If it's exposed, then you can be destroyed. Well, that's pretty fantastic if you're interested in being a fascist, if you want to control people, if you want to tailor the mind so that it can only operate within certain prescribed limits. This makes you drool if this is what you're interested in. Look at what we were able to do over here.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It is. I mean, look at people are getting, you know, fired and their careers destroyed because of a tweet. You know, remember 2012 was this Greek Olympian. She made a joke, right, on her Twitter feed, and she was ousted from the Olympics because of it. Of course, we have Donner Sterling with his phone call and all that. And they usually seem to pick, you know, the racial-oriented subjects because these are the most charged, obviously, but it's not really about the topic or what they say. That's something I think people miss. People have to try to, you know, drop the emotions around it, try to look beyond it and ask, okay, how is this being used and for what purpose? I mean, we have kids showing up wearing a t-shirt in supportive of gun rights, I think it was in America. He gets, you know, arrested like he's a terrorist. So people have done Facebook posts where people show up, the cops show up on the door and kick it in and haul them out. You know, it's like the politician from Liberty GB, the party over there in the UK, Paul Weston. He was arrested by the police for reading a quote by Winston Churchill, their ex prime minister, a hero in British, most people British eyes, I believe, and because he was critical of Islam. You know, and so there's, just as you said, there's no more. Sure, that particular case was a public event, of course, but just this idea again, the lines are blurred. There's no longer any public/private kind of distinction. It's really like living in that, you know, Big Brother house experience. You know, your everyday life, everything is monitored. Your diary is online, and anything that they can use against you, they will use. I see this as a kind of a war on human nature, as you said. It's a war on comedy. It's a war on critique. It's a war on creativity. It's all the basic things that we've been used to in human culture are basically being re-engineered, and they're using these really sensitive, charged topics to get the support of the people behind them. That's I can't look at it any other way.
You know, you're absolutely right. And comedy is kind of the test case. I mean, we've seen comedian after comedian you know, groveling, asking for forgiveness and apology and so forth, because careers are on the line. you know, most people don't, I guess, understand that, you know, like a number of other professions, somebody who's a comedian is fighting tooth and nail to try to get a gig. And finally he gets a gig and, you know, he makes whatever, you know, $30, and he's trying to climb up the ladder and he's trying to be better and he's trying to be more funny and he's trying to, you know, make a life and a career out of humor. He's trying to unleash in people what is repressed behind the social mask. I mean, that's what comedy does. And so you're going to be treading on all kinds of territory when you do that. If you don't do that, nothing is funny. Absolutely nothing is funny. And so you take one of these jokes out of context, you take a sentence out, and all of a sudden the guy's a thought criminal, and he has to apologize, and his career is basically over. And, you know, there you go. So what is happening there? Well, I remember very distinctly in the old days when one of the great pioneers, Lenny Bruce, was operating as a comedian. And he was saying, basically, look, this is what we want to be able to do. We take all of the words in the English language that are verboten and forbidden, and instead of trying to shield our children from all of this horrible stuff that's going on in the world, we expose these words and we use these words and we say these words over and over and over and over and over again until they absolutely lose their significance and meaning, and they lose that, you know, electricity that's been connected with them in the past. And that's how comedy saves the world. That's what we do.
Yeah.
We keep on doing it over and over and over again. Right? That was his, you know, tack. And he followed it in his routines. I mean, he would have been just absolutely pilloried for some of the stuff that he did if he were trying to do it today. He would have been destroyed 1,000 times. He would have been lucky if he was, you know, pumping gas out in the middle of the desert after they got through with him.
Right.
And, you know, that is the way that you really do this. You want to get rid of, you know, this bad word and that bad word and this, but you don't get rid of the words. You get rid of the badness that is associated with them by making so many jokes. You know, Springtime for Hitler, Mel Brooks, a routine that he developed. Charlie Chaplin, Hitler. These guys decided that what they wanted to do was to destroy Hitler through comedy, through making them into a joke, making Hitler into a joke. Well, depending upon how you do that these days, you could be accused of being a Nazi.
Oh, sure. Yeah, as you say, everything is literal, so of course, yeah.
Exactly, right? Everything is literal, you see. Everything is literal. Metaphor? What is that? I never heard of the word. What does it mean? You're making an image about this that really means that? That's too complicated. I don't want to. What are you talking about? You know, what did you go to college or something? You know, let's keep it down on the level of blah, 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 blah. Exactly. That's what they want. They want humans who only do monosyllables. Buh, 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 buh. That's what they want. That's political correctness. That's where it's going. That's absolutely where it's going. You know.
So nuances disappear, which means that communication will be degraded. We're basically turning into poorly programmed robots because, I mean, obviously, language and the usage of language, the interpretation of it, your vocabulary, all these things are tied to your thought process, whether we, you know, like to admit that or not. And so it's been a conscious idea to kind of destroy this relationship, if you will, to be able to again turn people into simpletons, turn them into something which is predictable, which kind of harkens back to what we talked about earlier in terms of you know, how do you predict human behavior? Well, first of all, you have to dumb down the population so that you can so that their choices and their variables become so small that you actually can't predict it, right? So it's, in a way, it's kind of all connected here. But what I wanted to ask you more about is, have you looked into anything of the history of this at all in terms of, you know, we have, for example, people like Herbert Marcuse, his work on repressive tolerance as an origin point for political correctness. But we have other organizations like the Frankfurt School, you know, the cultural Marxists, we have, which leads to, you know, minority rule. But there's other aspects of this as well, like Franz Boas and using, you know, Freudian psychoanalysis and frame it in sexual repression to kind of to use all these different fields for behavioral modification and ultimately steering society into the direction that you want. And, you know, way back behind all of this, you actually have an agenda to undermine the entire Western civilization, Western society, with the Western world as we know it as well. How deeply have you looked into this, John?
Deeply. Because it's been a preoccupation with me, really, I would say, for the last, I don't know, 50 years. Because I started out, you know, as a writer. I want to be a writer. So, of course, I read widely. I was tremendously influenced by a number of writers. I began to paint at around the same time. So for me, expression became a revelation. How does a person get bigger or expand or become more conscious or more creative or more powerful? That's really linked to expression. And what's expression all about? Is it just the capacity to scream yes or no? I mean, is that what it comes down to? And so the trend that I began to see a long time ago and have continued to follow it is simply what I would call reductionism. The idea being, we're going to dead end all of Western civilization in reduction. We're going to keep on shrinking it down and down and down, the tradition, the art, the culture, the civilization, the literature, the intelligence, everything. We're going to keep shrinking it down so that eventually it finally becomes, as you say, completely controllable. And one of the prime examples of that is Freud. Because when you think about it, what he was trying to do was to find the answer to all human repression, all human problems, all human difficulties, all human issues. And so he settled on some version of a Greek myth that had to do with incest and sex, and pretty much proclaimed that this was the bugaboo that had been haunting civilization ever since its inception. And that if you could unravel that one, then everything would be different. Everything. People would be liberated. Well, I mean, I've written extensively on how absurd that idea is.
Right, yeah.
But it's reduction. You see, you've got something to hang your hat on. Suddenly, and you can find numerous essays, articles in medical journals, psychiatric journals, books written in the wake of Freud, which began to psychoanalyze, in heavy quotes, great artists. Well, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, you see? And suddenly you've got an MD, psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, talking to the intellectual class now, saying, you know, you can really take Dostoevsky and reduce this all down to a case of paranoid schizophrenia.
Right.
I mean, that's what he was about.
Right.
And if you look at what this says then and what it says there, issues with his mother and father, and it all comes back to a sexual trauma and blah, 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 you know. And people were buying this as a new revelation, which essentially meant you don't have to read any of his books. You don't have to know what he said. You don't have to immerse yourself in the gigantic achievement that his novels made. Forget all that. All you have to know about him is X, Y, Z, and that's it. The most insane kind of analysis took over. So this eventually became part of a plan, as you say, the Frankfurt School and so forth. The plan was, if we take every field of human endeavor, as well as certainly history being one major one, and we keep shrinking it and shrinking it and shrinking it down, and we keep making it simpler and more stupid, eventually there will be nothing left. There will be no intelligence, there'll be no subtlety, there'll be no life in it, there'll be nothing fertile about it, nothing that's still alive. Everybody will be, as you say, a living robot, or what I would call a biological machine. And then we can control the whole shooting match. And that's cultural Marxism, you know, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
It's like political correctness, surveillance, shrinking down the language, shrinking down art, shrinking down what you can say. You see, you just made that statement. Well, that statement means nothing, because here's what your statement really indicates. Number one, bourgeois privilege.
Right.
And we'll throw in white privilege since you're white. Okay, that.
Right.
And, you know, you've got some idea about achievement, which means free market, which means that you want to leave a lot of people poor. We can see that from what you're talking about. Let's deconstruct. That's a whole movement that's part of this operation, deconstructionism. The whole point here is not to read a novel and understand it and immerse yourself in it and be inspired by it. No. The whole point is to take it apart, deconstruct it down to a few simple things about power. And what we mean by power is one person's power over another, one leaders of society's power over everybody else, because that's the history of the human race, and it's all about every society that's ever existed that wasn't Marxist was a tyranny, but somehow Marxism isn't. And that's the lesson to be learned here, right?
Exactly. It's funny to me. I mean, I mean, this is the very reason why people need to, you know, help each other in the fight against this new, you know, mind-based, you know, tyranny that's trying to supplant itself above or upon human civilization. And again, it has to be, you know, whether you agree with those who are opposed in your opinions or not. It's what people, I think, have to understand is that it's being used to not only, you know, destroy a certain group at the moment, is going to go after every single group that there is, right? This, it's about breaking down wherever the power center is. This is like it's a war tactic, really. You try to, you know, you gang up with those who you can to break down the powerful entity. And then when that's done, when that's achieved, you look, okay, who's next in this line? Okay, take on them. Who's next in this line? Take on them. This is a classic way you do it. Divide and conquer, etc. It's all about this idea, but that people have to try to understand that one day it's going to be in your own, you know, backyard. It's going to stand there and you're going to be the one who's targeted. And so in some way we have to try to, you know, see beyond the differences, if you will, or see those aspects that they want to try to divide us on and realize that, okay, if we play into this, we are being used. We're being used, you know, by the very people that are seeking your to undermine you. So we have to try to, how would you speak to that, John, in terms of like trying to not let these wedge issues control us so much that they do today? I mean, look at society, how polarized it is, how splintered up it is in this regard, and how everyone is, you know, at each other's throat all the time, right? So what's your idea in terms of turning that tide? Because it seems like they're winning right now, unfortunately.
Well, certainly shows like this make a big difference when people really listen to them and they wake up. You know, unpredictable things happen when people wake up. Fortunately, you can't produce a formula that's going to say what a person does when he wakes up, because waking up first of all, means that he understands more about his own freedom. He understands that in order to live a life, he has to express himself. In order to live a life, he has to refuse to apologize when he didn't do anything that needs apologizing for. And I see that happening. I see this as a kind of a boomerang. Political correctness is boomeranging. It's coming back on the people who are trying to foist it on us, because more people are standing up and saying, I'm not going to apologize for anything.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take too much of that to begin to get support. It doesn't really, because people recognize that all of a sudden. You know, it's like you, a guy who lives out in, I don't know, somewhere out in the American West, stands up and says, yeah, I own a gun. I know how to use it. I don't go around and kill people. I'm not breaking into people's houses and robbing them. Here's my gun. You want to look at it? This is how it works. This is who I am. And all of a sudden people go, wait a minute. What's going on here? Where is all the gun crime happening? Why aren't we hearing about that? You know, all sorts of things begin to develop from somebody just standing up and saying, oh no, not going to happen. Absolutely not going to happen. I said this. I'm not apologizing. And people begin to remember what it was like before they had to apologize, before they had to monitor and police themselves all the time. They remember. And that remembering is hooked into who they actually are. Who they actually are. And that means that they begin to wake up. I mean, there's a spiritual, you know, in the psyche, in the spirit, in the mind, where it really counts. People wake up there,
yeah,
and nothing is ever the same for them again.
Yeah.
So I say, you know, take a stand. Absolutely take a stand.
And dare to, you know, have some, you know, shit flung in your direction, right? This is about not bowing to it. Because ultimately, I mean, again, and just as you say, more and more people are doing this now. They see through the absurdity. They see through the idea that this is a war on human nature. It's a war on everything we are, everything we have been. And in this process, more and more people are going to begin to speak up against it. They're not going to care about what they are called or what people say about them accordingly, because all these, it's, the propaganda is insidious today. It's weaponized, right? It's actually, it's designed that way to shut down people, to, you know, to stifle criticism, to do all these things, right? And it's in the process we're, see, what I don't understand is that how, those who agree with this position, how do they not see that this is something that is ultimately detrimental to the whole human race? Our entire civilization is going to crumble if we build on these, frankly, weak foundations and petty issues. I mean, we should be talking about the secret space program, just the regular space program. We should be out in space, you know, exploring at this point. But what is happening in NASA? I know they're trying to, you know, they're putting millions into the outreach program to try to get Muslims up in, you know, involved in the NASA program and stuff like that. It's like, sure, that's great. I'm not saying that, but it's like, are we really focusing on the issues here? I mean, and ultimately, I can't help to see that this is what it's really about. It's about shutting down the engine of society, making us go backwards and become, you know, controllable in that regard. I guess backwards to a certain extent is not the right word there then, but we're going to head into a new direction where we haven't been before, a kind of a, as you said, a human robot in that regard. So it's about trying to get people to realize that this is actually it's a disservice to all of us by allowing this perpetual propaganda, weaponized propaganda, to continue. So how do we make people see that?
Well, as I say, when somebody stands up and refuses to apologize, it has a ripple effect. Other people begin to say, well, yeah, why should I feel guilty about XYZ? You know, one of these strategies, it's always about, what would I call this? Just looking for the best phrase for this. It's sort of the crime behind the contribution. Let's use that.
Mm.
Makes the contribution nullified. For example, if one were to just do a cursory study of what ancient Athens in a relatively short time supplied to the rest of the world in terms of knowledge, learning, freedom, art, you would say, well, you know, we would be celebrating that. Ah, but you see, now the academics have exposed and other people have exposed that there were slaves in Greece. Oh, well, in that case, forget about it.
Right.
Okay, now we come up to Declaration of Independence, Constitution. Hey, Thomas Jefferson had slaves. Why should we pay any attention to what this idiot had to say? Right?
Right. Yeah.
It's like the, you know, there's no, nothing is extenuating. It's all negative. We can absolutely declare him null and void because of that. As if the quote, good people on earth have never done anything wrong. So we can take them as being completely pure, right?
Yeah.
And therefore what they say, for example, you know, collectivism, Marxism, and so forth, this is all wonderful. I'm sure that Karl Marx was an absolutely wonderful guy. Really? Well, read a little about his life. I think you'll change your mind. But you see, certain people are protected. We don't want to know about their personal lives or what they did that would, quote, detract from what they had to say, because they're the favored ones. They're pushing forward the agenda that is going to enslave the world, so we want to protect them. But as far as everybody else, you see, it's the same thing as I said about Freud and psychoanalysis and the artists, you see. Well, you thought he was writing a novel, but really he was expressing a desire to have sex with his mother. Can't you see that? And therefore, we can dismiss this guy out of hand. In fact, we can dismiss all of the history of art, music, literature, logic, you know, philosophy, the whole shooting match from Western civilization, because we know that at bottom, all of these men were dying to have sex with their mother. Freud discovered this, and that's all we really have to know. And man, wow, what a revelation. And that, I don't have to go to college, I don't have to read, I don't have to do anything. Now I really understand the whole thing, you see. It's the same strategy, basically. And when people, if you become aware of this, then you begin to understand something here. Wait a minute. You know, you can read the Constitution and judge it in its own terms. You can read the Declaration of Independence or the Articles of Confederation. You can assess them and understand them on their own terms. You can see what they say. You can see what they created. I'm not saying everybody's perfect. Who's talking about perfection in the first place?
Well,
where
exactly.
Did that ever come in?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, these are the strategies that people have to become aware of. And yeah, I agree with you. The wave is getting higher. The stakes are going up. The punishment for being politically incorrect has, you know, skyrocketed. Absolutely skyrocketed. The penalties have increased. But somebody's saying, I'm not apologizing. Okay.
Yeah.
That begins to suddenly, wait a minute, everything comes to a halt. You mean, you don't feel bad that you said, no, I don't. Why should I? Do you want to know more about what I really think? In which case, I'll be happy to tell you. But if you want to pin me to these three sentences that I said or wrote, if that's all we're talking about, right? I'm not apologizing for anything. If you're taking my whole life, so to speak, out of context, and you are focusing me, my name, my reputation, what I stand for and everything, and basing it on these three sentences, and you're going to make a judgment call, and you're going to ask me to apologize, and that's the only option for me, I'm not apologizing for shit, baby. You're not going to get any kind of remorse out of me whatsoever. Right?
It's like a spell that has to be broken. It has to no longer, you know, wield its magic over us. Yeah.
There you go. That's exactly what it is. It's a spell, see. A guy attacked me who was a Martian. And, you know, we all know what we call Martians. So, yeah, that's what I called them. And afterwards, that's what I said he was to one of my friends. And you want me to apologize? Is that it? Because somebody taped this? And this is me, you think? This is my whole life. This is what I am. I'm not apologizing for shit. That's the end of that.
Yeah.
And a little bit of the spell is suddenly broken. People go, wow, yeah, whatever. You know?
It didn't work on that guy. Yeah.
Are we so naive as to believe that throughout the entire history of humanity that people have not behaved differently privately than they do publicly?
Right, yeah.
Are you kidding? I mean, that's the level of education now. That's the level of, you know, human experience. When all experience is virtual and nobody actually lives, you know, really lives and mixes with other people and realizes what they talk about and what they say. Like, I'll give you an example. A white guy is a friend with a black guy, okay? They're buddies. They work at the same job. I don't care, whatever it is, right? And they go out and they have a drink now and then, and they, you know, go over to each other's house and whatever, families and whatever. And when these two guys are sitting around, they make jokes with each other. Now, these guys are both what I would call straight-ahead people. They're not easily, you know, upset. Oh, my goodness, I'm not, you know, that's not it. They're not that way.
Right.
So if you were to record their private jokes and conversations and the needles that they stick into each other, you know, in their way of humor, you could build a case against these guys in which they would be both now living naked in the North Pole.
Yeah.
Without a hope of fucking survival.
Yeah.
Right? Now, there's a considerable sector or territory of our society that actually does live exactly like these two guys live. Mixed religions, mixed races, mixed whatever. They get along. They make jokes, this, that, and the other thing. They stick needles into each other. They have a good time with it. Right? There's a lot of these people out there who couldn't care less about all this politically correct crap. But you never hear about them.
Never, of course not. Because, see, that's a scenario that actually works, and that's not what we're going to focus on. We're going to focus on what is it that creates chaos? What is it that creates the conditions for us to have to, you know, move in there and re-educate people and bring in a, you know, a surveillance state and monitor what everybody's saying, re-educate the whole, you know, the privilege conferences, everything else. That's what it's about, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's about suddenly everything is about respect and disrespect. Where did that come from? What kind of insanity is that? You know, those terms are relative and they all depend upon who is involved. You know, people who know each other, who get along. There's a very long rope there. They can say almost anything to each other, and it means absolute nothing. Right? But as you say, that's not focused on. That's not part of a story. That doesn't become news. certainly not tabloid, because that would destroy all of this, you see. If you put that on TV and online video enough, with enough of these people who rub elbows with each other at work, after work, who are friends, who get along, whose families get along, all of a sudden people would begin to wake up and say, you know, the spell is broken. What's all this other insanity that's going on here about what I can think and can't think, say, not say?
Yeah.
You know, where did that come from? That, to me, you know, we got to remember that. We got to emphasize that. Absolutely. When I was a kid, it used to be one of the subject of jokes, and I'm talking about when I was like six. Your mother, right?
Right.
People would make jokes, elaborate jokes, statements about your mother. They would think this stuff up. I mean, this, you know, certain amount of creativity went into it. Your mother is a whatever. Your mother does this, your mother did that, whatever. And it was sort of a mark of praise for who could come up with the most clever stuff, you see. But nobody really thought that this was serious. First of all, people didn't know each other's mothers, you know. This was all in the realm of kind of friendly competition, one-upsmanship. And I'll say something else, too, about this. It was quite obvious when I grew up that competition was an element of life. Played games.
Yeah.
Somebody won, somebody lost. You know?
Yeah. Thank God those barbarous years are over.
Yeah. You know, we were all living in caves, of course, you know. Nothing civilized about it. We were, you know, killing dogs and ripping them apart and eating the raw meat. But yes, in those days, that's the way it was. And there were no, or very few, what you would call supervised sports. So I would play with three or four other kids after school and on the weekends. And whatever game it was, say it was baseball or whatever, you know, we would play 10, 15 games of our own devising every day. And you would win some and lose some. You tried to win. You wanted to win. Believe me, it wasn't like you were passive. But if you lost, okay, let's go again. And you would. So after a while, nobody's losing any sleep over the fact that you lost three games on a Saturday afternoon, because there's always more. It wasn't like, well, you're in the league and with all the equipment and the coaches and the parents hovering over every. No, there were no parents around. You kidding? They would have been exiled. I mean, we would have just picked up our gloves and bats and balls and found a new place to play that nobody knew about where there were no parents around. Nobody wanted their parents around to watch them play games. This was all stuff that we made up. And therefore, okay, with that kind of flexibility, we could say things to each other, insults, jokes, whatever, whatever, that were just part of the repartee. It was all just about, you know, competitive amusement, right? Could you needle the other guy? Could you provoke a reaction? That's it.
Yeah.
But now, all of a sudden, with the, quote, cooperative society, right, which is a huge hoax. I mean.
It is, yeah.
A gigantic hoax, because it has nothing to do with real cooperation. It's all artificial, synthetic.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have 15 kids roll this giant ball around and try to get it to go in this hole that somebody built. You know, Mr. Smith built this hole, and now we're all going to celebrate when we get the ball to roll in the hole and we get little certificates.
Yay, everybody's a winner. Yeah.
Everybody's a winner. Bullshit, right? And now, you see, with this kind of mealy-mouthed, wimpoid cooperation being the standard, okay, and we're all in this together, and it's a rainbow world, and, you know, there's no difference between you and me, and blah, blah, blah. And all of the sort of covert undercurrents that that implies, sinister undercurrents. Now, if you say something to somebody else that's a little bit off color, out of sync, now it becomes a big deal. All of a sudden, it's a big deal. You disrespected so-and-so. Now we have to teach you not to do that again, because you see, within this framework, and that's the PSYOP. That's what they're building. They are building the cooperative world, which is not really a cooperative world at all, because in the process, they're erasing the individuals involved. It's just a filament. It's a veil. It's a prop. It's not real. It's completely synthetic. It's not based on anything voluntary and free. It's all based on a kind of friendly fascism. And now, yes, absolutely, there will be many politically incorrect things and many ways in which people are supposed to police themselves and what they think, say, or do. You bet. Absolutely. In fact, one New Age guru, I remember some years ago, made this kind of image. We're entering a new world that's never been seen before. And in this new world, everything that you think will instantly come true as reality. Therefore, the only people who will make it through the eye of the needle into the new world are those people who have purified themselves, purified their thoughts, so that there is nothing negative in what they think, because in the new world, that negative thing would instantly become reality. So there will be many people left behind because they are not pure enough. Now, as insane as that may sound, that is, in a way, the underlying premise of all of this.
Yeah.
The purification, the reduction of the biological flesh machine so that nothing untoward or negative is expressed or thought.
And see, I want to add something here as well. What people have to think about is, I mean, do you really think that out of this environment that we are creating now, that we are building, that young men and women, but primarily men, because those are traditionally those who used to fight the wars and actually challenge up to battle, etc. But these young men and women growing up right now, do they really think that out of this environment, resistance to a ruthless control apparatus that have nuclear weapons, death rays, and mind control at their disposal, that they're going to be rebellious individuals that can resist this level of coercion and warfare directed against them? I mean, people are naive to think that this infrastructure of control and militarization and all of this, the police state, that this is somehow magically going to disappear as we move towards this kind of, you know, new world order kindergarten type scenario here, you know. And this is the people who are the pedagogues, you know, those who are teaching these new victims as they grow up. It's like there's such a schism here in terms of, like, wouldn't you want to have people who are able to defend, you know, and people who are able to actually, you know, challenge up to a fight so we can actually crush the control system and all this. But all of a sudden it's like, no, that just magically is going to disappear. We can all just wander off into this rainbow haze all of a sudden and things are going to be great, you know? And it's just, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen like this. It's, again, it's being used as a weapon against all of mankind. And what are the level, what is the quality of the type of young boys and girls? How what are they going to grow up to become? I'm afraid of that, you know?
You bet. You use the word kindergarten, that's it. The idea is to have everybody living in a kindergarten, you see, so that the teacher can say, Jimmy, did you just say that word? And now, I went to a nursery school where that was the case. And I got to tell you, this was 1943, New York City. So this has been happening now for
a long
while,
time.
Okay?
Wow. Yeah.
1943.
Wow.
And the first day, I mean, I can still remember this. Somebody, the teacher said, I want to explain a couple things to you. And she said, this is what we do. And I said, okay. And she stopped and she said, Johnny, we don't say okay. We say, all right. So that was my first faux pas. Somehow, okay was considered to be slang. Oh, we're more proper than that, right? This is a little corny nursery school with like 30 kids around the corner from where I lived in Manhattan. This is kindergarten. This is, you know, pre-kindergarten. This is like, and it's the tone. You say, oh, we're going to help you. And, oh, no, don't say that.
That's how the New World Order is going to be enforced. Not with, you know, well, it's going to be there in the backdrop, as I said, with like missiles and death rays and everything
yeah,
else. Right?
Right.
But the front of it is going to be like this velvet glove. It's going to be all nice. It's going to be like the police officers in THX 1138. We're only here to help you. We want to, you know, how do you feel? Is something wrong? You know.
Exactly. And I think that the movies, you know, a lot we could talk about there, but the movies are really missing a great bet there.
Certainly. Yeah.
I mean, because they should be showing a lot more of that. See, where the coercion is all beautiful.
Exactly.
Like, oh,
yeah.
You know, and gee, you're making a mistake, Mr. Jones. We're just here to help you. You know, because people, you know, the reason they don't put this in the movies is because people would recognize this. They would say, you know, it would strike a chord in their unconscious. They would recognize that all their lives, to a rather extraordinary degree, they've been controlled by this kind of, it's a frequency. It's kind of like, we're kind, we're helping you. Oh, how can you resist help? We're just here to, you know. And if you were able to, you know, suddenly take a movie of somebody's whole life, you would be able to pinpoint a surprising number of events where the turning points where that was the way that control was exerted.
Right. Yeah.
It's not, no, damn you, and all the movies about, my father, you know, kicked me from one wall to another when I was a kid. I mean, if you're a celebrity now, you know, if you don't have a backstory like that, you're completely useless. Yeah, so-and-so finally owned up to the fact that her father raped her when she was this and that and the other thing. Because everybody, all fathers are raping all children all over. You know, it's all happening all the time.
Exactly.
And so, thank God she's been so brave to come forward and confess it. Now, most of the time, what's happening is through, you know, the kind guidance of the wise ones, people are being diverted and controlled and taken away from their own power. Their own power, their own freedom, their own independence, their own, you know, strength. And that is a big one. That is a gigantic thing. And that's really how political correctness, most of the time, operates, you see. It's like the old Chinese self-criticism, you know, re-education system. We want to help you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we want to make you better. Okay, well, you know, yeah. And I also see those guys outside with guns, so I guess I have to, you know, go along with this. So let's all pretend that it's nice. And okay, so what do I have to do? Well, first thing you have to do is confess that you were wrong. Okay, well, I was wrong. You bet. Well, good. That's a good start. Now, we want to know how you were wrong. See, it's not enough to apologize. You've got to, you know, tell a whole story here. You've got to weep. You've got to get down on your knees. You've got to, you know, subjugate yourself. You've got to get into the humiliation of it all.
Repent, yeah.
Repent, exactly. And so now we get back to, you know, the religious roots of all of this, right?
Yeah.
Because the whole Roman Catholic enterprise, that church is based on the whole, you know, abject humiliation. I remember going to Quebec when I was like 16, 17, and we were outside some huge church, And somebody said, you know, you see all the stone steps going up to the church here? It was very early in the morning. If you hang around, you're going to see people crawling up the steps. I don't know how many. It looked like 100, 200 steps just to get into the church. I said, really? Yep. They do that all the time. Yeah, I well, you know, what for? Well, you know, it's a way of whatever and so on and so forth, you know. And then, of course, you learn about these people in the Middle Ages who were beating themselves with whips and marching around. Humiliation, you know, for the guilt of original sin. And then, you know, the scenario all expands from there with, you know, the entire church cosmology. But, you know, very effective, extremely effective. And we're just seeing that, you know, played out in America, for example, and other countries, certainly in other countries, in a kindergarten fashion. We realize that you're far more stupid than the people in the Middle Ages, right? So we have to just give it to you this way. No, 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 you don't say that. It might offend somebody. I mean, this, I get this, you know, all the time. I came out of the 60s with this kind of bad taste in my mouth because I recognized there were good things in the 1960s. But as the 1970s began to roll in, I began to see more and more of the rainbow people, as I call them, around.
You yeah, know? Yeah.
Everything is wonderful. And why are you angry? That's another big one.
Right.
Why are you angry? He's angry. That's a bad thing. That is just, you know, that's going to be karma that's going to rebound against him. That shows that he's not evolved. He's angry. And that's a bad thing for him. I mean, I can certainly tolerate it, I suppose. But, you know, it shows that whatever he has to say is obviously not worth listening to because he's angry, and that means that he's not evolved to the point where he can get beyond that. And I have to say that there are a lot of people who become quite well known and popular in the world because they can present themselves as being above anger.
Right, yeah.
And other people go, wow, did you hear the information that he was giving out? And did you notice how much of an even keel he was on and how tolerant and wise and kind of loving and so forth and so on? You know, wow. I began to see this around me as a cultural phenomenon that was occurring more and more and more and more and more.
Right, yeah.
And people were going for it. If you want to be listened to and accepted, you have to present yourself as being beyond anger. Wow, what a premise that is.
No strong emotions whatsoever, really, preferably.
Exactly, yeah. No strong emotions whatsoever.
Yeah. Although people love, of course, the emotional bits because people get all emotional about that, you know, so.
Yeah. And the rise of, you know, the personal computer revolution and what was spawned in Silicon Valley, those people came out of that operant conditioning, mind-controlled era of the 1960s going into the 70s where, you know, everything was about the coming utopia, the coming breakthrough into a new level of civilization. Personal enlightenment, which would take you beyond any strong emotion. And so when they began to preach the philosophy behind the internet and all of that, that's what they were preaching. That this is automatically going to take us to another level to be able to, quote, share all of this information with each other. And so when you saw a Bill Gates, who to me, it's like looking at a bland egg. You know, you look at his face, it's like... though there was a puppet when I grew up named Howdy Doody on television. And, you know, he looks kind of like a cross between Howdy Doody and Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine, you know, that comic.
Right.
This sort of like goof, the goof. That's the front. I'm saving the world. Ha ha ha. Isn't it wonderful?
Right.
You know, that's the Gates front. It's great. I'm saving the world.
It comes with a smile. I'm doing the right thing. We're getting the vaccines to Africa. It's all going to work out, folks.
Right. You know, yeah. What else do you want from me? GMO food. We're getting the vaccines there. The population is going to shrink. My father was a eugenicist. I mean, you know, come on, let's go. I mean, that's the attitude. It's sort of that he must be wise and enlightened because, look, he's not displaying any strong emotion. It's wonderful, right? And just to cast another arrow, since, you know, I'm getting into that. Look at all the TED Talks. Just forget about the information, you know. But look at the lighting, right?
Yeah.
Look at the way the stage is there and the kind of hushed atmosphere. And it's always a nice big stage when they video these and, you know, whatever, who is ever in the audience, you know. Brave New World audience, right?
Yeah.
And listen to the music of the speaker. Don't listen to the word. Just listen to the tones coming out and the way it's being presented and so forth and so on. You see, we are all here connecting because we are big brains. Right?
Yeah.
And it's my brain to your brain. And we don't need to engage in any of that human stuff that has to do with feeling and emotion except for, you know, a burst of enthusiasm at the right moment when you see and I see the same vision of how we're all moving into a greater future together. It's all going to be fine when we hook up to the singularity and we're all connected to the big brain, wherever that is. It's a computer. And then we'll all have all information all the time and we'll all agree on everything. And you know, and I know that's where we're going and it's going to be wonderful. And here's my 15 minutes on that or some version of that.
Right.
And you just kind of listen to it as music and you get where these people are. This is also part of political correctness. It's part of the surveillance state. It's part of why Edward Snowden has to be a hero, because he looks like he's completely, you know, okay with himself and he's not angry. I mean, I got to tell you, just on a personal note, if I stole 2 million documents from NSA because I thought they were the most evil people on the planet, if somebody interviewed me, I'd get pissed off.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it would be natural for me.
Right.
I would say, yeah, I took the documents from those motherfuckers because they're trying to control everybody. But see, that doesn't play very well in this atmosphere that we're talking about. You know, and if you want to get Russ Tice, he looks a little flabby, you know. And if Ed Snowden was, I don't know, let's see, if he was, let's pick something here. If he was short, with a lot of frizzy hair, Jewish, big nose, thick glasses, a little halting in his speech. You know, it's not central casting. We want a TED type guy.
Right, a kind of techie, science, a little nerdy in a way, but, you know, still kind of well put together. And
all got it all together.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one of the basic reactions. This guy has got it all together. Look at him. He's got it all together. He looks like he's 15, and this is what he did, you know? So he has to be a hero. And I'm not using that to denigrate Snowden. I'm just showing you the way the images play.
Yeah.
It's like, and how people react, you see.
Well, that's it. Just in other words, what you're saying is they've looked around, and they picked just the right person for the part to play, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, medium, I want my eggs medium over. Just put them on the plate, nice and shiny. Nothing on the side. All happy, happy, happy.
Sunny side up, yeah.
Sunny side up. It's all sunny side up. And that's, you know, one of the great themes here as part of the surveillance state, which, you know, you can connect that with Eric Schmidt at Google saying, if you haven't done anything wrong, why do you care if people are spying?
Exactly. Yeah.
You see,
that's a good approach.
Exactly. And people say, well, you know, he's right. And I guess that's why I'm not afraid, because I haven't done anything wrong. Translation. I haven't done anything.
Exactly.
Ever.
Yeah.
And never will, except go along and obey. And of course, if you want to dig back into my childhood, I mean, yeah, there's a few things there that, but we'll forget about that. You know, the time I burned down the house, well, you know, okay, but you know, they're never going to find that out. So I can really say with total certainty that I've never done anything wrong, and therefore I'm not afraid. And so then this becomes a kind of, you know, calling card in telecoms, Silicon Valley. If you haven't done anything wrong, there's nothing to be afraid of. Wow. I mean, talk about Brave New World.
Yeah, exactly.
1984. You could write that, you know, in stone over the gate that leads into that civilization. If you haven't done anything wrong, you have nothing to be afraid of.
Well, wow. I know it's just unbelievable that the people are taking, well, some people are taking this, and of course the more absurd it gets like this, and the more they're pushing it as well, that is a positive aspect. I mean, the more way out there this gets, the more people actually wake up as a consequence of it. But I mean, one thing that I'd like to say there as well is that to kind of reemphasize the point you mentioned earlier, that it's about becoming unpredictable, that we've talked about before, creativity that you've talked with Lana about before on 314, you know, that it to open up that Pandora's box of creativity, humor, you know, get into movies or music, whatever it is that you do, you know, analyze the BS that you see in the media and entertainment. And I mean, there's a lot to do here, but preventing the destruction of the human race and actually fighting against the New World Order globalist elite is actually a surprisingly satisfactory task to be involved in. So people should just dig in, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what other game is there? I mean, it's a tremendous thing. You bet. And the expression, you know, your expression, whoever you are who's listening to this, to express what it is that you really want to express, is so liberating, you know, and then you find emotions that have been buried forever. Because, I mean, we've talked about it, but it bears repeating that you are not supposed to express certain emotions. That this has become, over the last few decades, more and more politically incorrect. And so that buttons up people even more. And certain groups are allowed to express these emotions, but not those. And then this group over here can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, it has to do with emotions. It has to do with being buttoned up. And then people police themselves because they say to themselves, gee, if I were to express this emotion, people would reject me. They would say I was crazy, or that I was unbalanced, or that I should see a psychiatrist, or this, that, or the other thing, so I better not do that.
Mm.
Well, that's like saying you're operating an engine that has 60 billion horsepower, but you're only permitted to operate it so that it has 50.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about
exactly.
Energy here.
Yeah.
And when people wonder why they don't have as much energy as they want, they could look to that as being quite, quite significant. Because the thing is, once you begin to create, emotions surface and you express them. It's healthy, it's alive, it's real, it's electric. And you feel better and you feel more powerful because you are more powerful. And therefore, you're better able to live, you're better able to get into this great game of, you know, resisting and attacking the elite control of the planet. Everything at the deepest level is better for you. So what is all this operant conditioning about repressing emotion? Well, it's designed for control as usual. That's where it comes from.
Interesting.
That's where it is.
Yeah. It's a very interesting observation. I've seen that the audiences, or if we look at the demonstrators out on the street or whatnot, and even the some of the politics there, that's very much run by emotions. You're right, but the management of this is done by people who are kind of the exuberant, this kind of, you know, a superhuman quality of being beyond and above everything, basically, you know, and kind of being the managers of these very emotionally based, you know, crowds, of course. So that's very interesting. It's a good observation.
Yeah, that's how, you know, okay, now you are permitted to look at a protest on television and you'll see all kinds of rabble out in the street screaming and blood or whatever, you know, but here's what it means. We now tell you what it means.
Yeah.
And now you know that in this circumstance, it's either good or bad, depending upon what we say. It's either Arab Spring, in which it's wonderful, you know, springtime, right? It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Or it's horrible and we have to do something about it. And whatever we say, that's the answer. And we certainly don't want you to involve yourself with these emotions. We just want you to know what the right answer is and how we're dealing with it, and everything's okay. And because I'm a television anchor, you see, I never display any kind of emotion that could be construed as being intensely personal or somehow out of control. You'll never see that happening from me, and you watch me every night on the news. So by osmosis, you will learn how you should handle information, truth, your life, the news, everything. This is a great teaching lesson, you know.
Yeah.
You will learn from me. I'm Brian Williams. And if you want to cry a little and learn how to do that, you watch Diane Sawyer. And if you want to learn how to be a brain surgeon who operates on people with no anesthetic, you just watch Scott Pelley on CBS, because, you know, he'll give you that kind of cold, you know, kind of distant thing. And this is all in the service of helping you understand what's going on in the world, because we don't want these unruly feelings to enter in. And you will eventually learn the bottom line lesson, which is that if you let one of these emotions out of the box, everything that happens after that is going to be out of control. And you will end up doing something that will wind you up in a very bad place. And you won't know how you got there. You won't know what happened. So you have to keep all that emotion in check.
It's interesting. It reminds me of the Vulcans. It's not only the Star Trek made up race of people there, but the political group with Condoleezza Rice and all the other ones that were part of that. They call themselves the Vulcans, right? Because it was about being above and beyond the emotional life, you know, and kind of making the tough decisions without the emotions, right?
Yeah.
Like invading Iraq and Afghanistan.
Exactly. You know? And then they, I don't know if you remember, I'm sure you do, but at the outbreak of Persian Gulf 2, all of a sudden Rumsfeld became a national hero, because Rumsfeld was permitted to express a certain amount of emotion, disgust at the press, arrogance, didn't care. Oh, wow, we haven't seen that for a long time in any public figure. So, okay, for 15 minutes, he'll be our hero. He's a great guy. He's fantastic. And then, you know, he went into the closet, never to be seen again, and eventually, you know, resigned because he was a little bit too ragged. But, yeah, Cheney, always very even. Bush, completely incomprehensible, you know, like Donald Duck, whatever. and Condoleezza Rice, very measured, you know. Oh, yes, highly educated, knows more than you could possibly understand, you know, occasionally. You'll see Brzezinski, another guy who looks like a brain surgeon without, you know, giving people anesthetic, or you'll see Kissinger, you know, who looks like a machine that's been put on slow motion. You know, all these people, the think tank people, are very much like the Silicon Valley people. We have made the calculations. We have run the numbers. We have the algorithms. We know exactly where all this is going. It's going to be wonderful, and everybody is going to be able to participate in it. So just let us do our thing, and it's all going to be great. How could it be otherwise? We're not displaying any kind of outrageous feelings here. We're just being intelligent. So what is there to say against this? This is all about science, technology, I mean.
Yeah.
No, come
yeah.
on. Yeah. And people say, yeah, I guess so, you know, wow.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's really strange in terms of how that's developing. It's almost like I already see that it's kind of like a sub grouping within the human species that's developing, and kind of had this with this type of attitude. The TED Talk kind of crowd, you know, taking over, running the show. You know, interesting.
I'll give you another example, and I'm sure some people will say this about some things I've said here. Once I opened up No More Fake News about 13 years ago now, and, you know, I began to, okay, get away from my typewriter, I'll use a computer, and I'll find out what's happening online. I began to see the word rant popping up all over the place. Now, the people who were using the word were tech heads. And to me, understanding a little bit about the English language, I know what the word rant means. It means a rant, you know. But it was taken to mean any kind of emotional expression all of a sudden.
Oh, right.
Or somebody expressing maybe six opinions in a row without a citation, you know, and a footnote.
Yeah.
It meant he is given to expressing himself. All of those became synonymous with rant, which used to be used, you know, to mean somebody who was just absolutely, you know, over the hill and into the woods. I mean, somebody who was talking gibberish and, you know, just not in possession of their senses. But all of that was dialed back. To me, it was a crucial kind of discovery. Because I realized, okay, so the people who think that they are running the internet, you know, the people who are the tech heads, they have a view of reality about all the information that's being presented on the internet, and they know what a rant is, and they're talking about a rant, and that what they mean is the expression of opinion, feeling, in words. Wow. That's a sea change. That's a whole different thing. Yeah, because they have been trained and induced in their own lives and have done it to themselves to be people who are above all that, they say.
Right, yeah.
So, and these are the people who are making very significant decisions. These are the people who will say, if you didn't do anything wrong, you have nothing to worry about if we spy on you all the time.
Right? Oh, man. Yeah. Well, it's just, it's an extraordinary world, and it's just, it's good that we have people like you, John, who can analyze some of these items for us and bring some sensible perspective into the madness that we have here. And we could, we could certainly go on for another couple of hours here, I think, in terms of
easy.
There's so much to talk about, but, yeah, if we begin to wrap things up here for this time, give us the websites again, of course, where we can find out more. And, of course, it's going to be great seeing you at the conference, the Secret Space Program conference here in June. A final plug for that as well here. And people can go to secretspaceprogram.org to find out more, to see John Rappaport and all the other great speakers there as well. But yeah, give us if there's something else you'd like to leave us with, and of course, websites and such.
Well, I am looking very much forward to the conference, and I think it's going to be really an interesting event. I mean, I urge people to show up for it, in part because of who all the speakers are who are going to be there, the subject, and also because it's live. Who ever thunk of that? Actual people sitting there looking at other people live and even interacting. My goodness.
Why, exactly. Yeah, getting out of the computer world for a little bit, you know, it's really important to do that.
You bet. So my site is nomorefakenews.com. People can come there, read my blog, many articles, usually every day, sometimes more than one a day, on a variety of subjects, and hope to see you up in San Mateo at the end of June.
All right, very good. Website nomorefakenews.com. Go there to follow John's writings, of course. There's a lot of good articles coming out there, so keep an eye on that. And, of course, the Matrix series as well. We have that right there on the homepage, so take a look at that. All right, well, John Rappaport, thank you again for joining us. Keep up the good work, and we'll see you soon.
Henrik, thanks so much. It's been a joy to sit here and talk to you.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's our broadcast for today. We have Radio 314 next with Atti Skutte from South Africa. Then we have a very interesting program with Felice Vinci and Bill Mullen on the Baltic origins of Homer's epic tales. Don't miss that one. Really good stuff. Also, Dave McGowan, David Matheson, Carol Rosen, and Gregory Sams are coming on the program after this. Thank you for your time today, folks, and thank you so much for being a member and your continued support of our efforts. But even more than that, we appreciate your interest and desire to wanting to inform yourself about these topics, for learning, for studying, for having, you know, the drive and urge to get to the roots of things and wanting to know with honesty and sincerity. All right, I hope we'll see you in San Mateo. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good one, everybody. Thank you.